The crisis at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant has raised a lot of questions about the risks of radiation near and at a distance from the plant, and the danger of radioactive iodine showing up in seawater, drinking water, milk, and spinach. So for this week's Please Explain, we thought that we would find out about radiation from nuclear fallout to airport body scanners to X-rays and medical treatments. And joining us are Kenneth Mossman, professor of health physics at Arizona State University in Tempe, and Jacqueline Yanch, radiation physicist and senior lecturer in the Department of Nuclear Science and Engineering at MIT. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kenneth, how many sources of radiation are there? Are there any number that aren't radioactive? Isn't that true?
Oh, there are hundreds of different kinds of radioactive materials, far more than the number of stable radioactive materials. The number that comes to mind is something like 800 or 900, but it actually may be more than that. And
we're talking about radio waves, microwaves, even sunlight?
The radioactive materials produce X-rays. They produce gamma rays. They produce particulate radiations like beta particles and alpha particles. And then, of course, there is sunlight from includes ultraviolet light and visible light that the human eye is capable of sensing. You can talk about sound waves as a form of radiation in that it is they're pressure waves in the air. Radiation can be defined broadly as the transport of energy from one point in space to another point in space.
So, Jacqueline, is the big difference that some are ionizing and some are non-ionizing?
Oh, yes. The big difference is, of course, that ionizing radiation has the ability to kick an electron out of a neutral atom or molecule. And once it is charged, once that electron is gone, it may behave differently than the neutral atom would have behaved. And in that case, it could have a follow-on effect.
Is that why...
So ionizing...
Go ahead.
Sorry? Ionizing radiation is at the high end of the electromagnetic spectrum, high frequency end. At the lower frequency region, we have, as Dr. Mossman said, infrared radiation, ultraviolet radiation, and even lower radio waves, microwaves, visible light. But it's only at the very high frequency end that the radiation has the ability to ionize. And usually when we refer to radiation as we are when we talk about the problems in Japan, with the reactors in Japan, we're sort of implicitly talking about ionizing radiation. And it has a different effect on the body than non-ionizing radiation has.
So something like uranium, which is one of the highest elements on the periodic table, would be naturally ionizing?
The radiation that comes from uranium is ionizing, yes, yes.
And Kenneth, the Grand Central Terminal is built of granite, which gives off radiation, doesn't it? Should that be of concern to somebody who commutes every day for year in and year out throughout a lifetime?
The Grand Central Station is a classic example of a structure that has high natural background radiation. And what we mean by that is it is made of materials that contain terrestrial radionuclides, that is, radioactive materials that normally exist in the Earth's crust. The radiation levels in Grand Central Station are higher than they are in other areas, but there are no epidemiological studies that suggest that individuals who are transiting the station on a regular basis are at a higher health risk than anyone else.
I'd worry about those people who work at Hudson News. You don't visit Grand Central very often, I suspect, so you don't know. But, Jacqueline, some types of radiation are able to penetrate different materials, aren't they? The reason we wear a lead apron when we get X-rays at the dentist?
Well, that's right. X-rays and gamma rays, which are essentially the same thing, have the ability to penetrate fairly large distances. But on the flip side, they deposit only a little bit of energy per unit distance. Other types of radiation, like alpha particles, and uranium gives off alpha particles as well as gamma rays, alpha particles travel only, say, tens of microns, so fractions of a millimeter, but they dump all of their energy in that fraction of a millimeter. So they don't go very far, but what they irradiate gets a lot of energy.
And they're the more dangerous ones?
Well, it depends. If the alpha particle source is on the outside of your body, then you don't really need to worry because that alpha particle won't even make it through the dead layer of your skin. But if you breathe it in or if you ingest it in your food, then it's inside your body, and that all of that energy is going to be dumped in just a few cell thicknesses. When you go to the dentist or get an X-ray and they put a lead apron on you, they're shielding you against the penetrating nature of the X-rays that are creating the image.
My guests are Jacqueline Yanch, radiation physicist and senior lecturer in the Department of Nuclear Science and Engineering at MIT, and Kenneth Mossman, professor of health physics at Arizona State University in Tempe. We're talking about radiation on today's Please Explain. You can give us a call at 646-829-3985 or leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And we'd also like you to know that on our blog, The Lowdown, we have posted a primer on uranium. So, Kenneth, in Japan, many people are wearing masks to protect themselves against the radioactivity. Did the masks do any good?
Well, masks can be useful if there are particulate particles that that can be breathed in. The masks per se aren't useful in terms of blocking a lot of radioactive materials, but can be used as respiratory protection for dusts and other kinds of particles that could be harmful to the lungs.
Well, Jacqueline said that ingesting or breathing it in are the most dangerous. There's no problem if our skin is just exposed to it?
Well, it depends on the concentration of radioactive material. There were a couple of workers at the Fukushima Daiichi plant that were given medical attention because of skin burns. I don't know what the nature of the exposure was beyond the dose being of the order of 17 millirem to about 25 millirem, whole body equivalent dose. But nonetheless, with certain kinds of radioactive material, particularly cobalt and the like, a high local concentration can cause skin injury.
I gather they were walking through radioactive water.
That's correct. I've not seen a lot of the detailed reports as to what the localized skin dose was, because the reports were that they had skin injury. Normally, skin injury requires a very large dose to be able to see acutely. And what I mean by that is the clinical evidence of burn follows very quickly after exposure. And I'm not aware of any dose calculations locally to the skin that would be consistent with the finding of skin lesions.
Jacqueline, in Japan, small amounts of radiation were found in spinach, milk, and drinking water. I'm assuming that the milk gets that because a cow eats grass that's been contaminated. So does that mean that its meat would also become contaminated?
Well, they've been contaminated with iodine-131, which is a volatile radionuclide that has been released from the plant. And like you said, it falls onto the grass, and the cows eat the grass, and then it makes its way into the milk. We get the milk a lot faster than we're going to get any meat from the cattle. The iodine has only an 8-day half-life. So whereas we get the milk quickly, it's going to be some time before we get the meat from those cattle, and by that time a substantial amount of the radioactivity will have disappeared. The levels seem to be quite small. They've only voiced a concern for young children drinking the milk. But in terms of meat, I don't think there's going to be an issue as long as the radiation levels stay as low as they are.
What about the spinach? Does that mean the soil is contaminated?
I suspect that it's dry deposition, so the particulate falls from the air onto the spinach, and then the spinach is harvested. It would be worse if the particulate had made its way into the soil and into the water, and then it would have been taken up by the spinach plant in, via water, and then it's part of the spinach. But I suspect that that's not what has happened. It's more likely to be just deposited on the surface.
Well, Kenneth, what happened to the farm areas near the Three Mile Island plant or the one in Chernobyl?
Well, at the situation at Three Mile Island is quite different. Even though Three Mile Island and Fukushima Daiichi are both categorized as level five events based on the International Nuclear Event Scale, there was very little release of radioactive material at Three Mile, and only about 15 curies of iodine. Compared in, to Chernobyl, which was an entirely different event in that there was no containment capacity at the Chernobyl nuclear plant, and so there was a massive release of radioactive material. Something like 7 million curies of iodine were released there. But I wanted to add something to Professor Yanch's comment, and that is that we've learned a lot from the Chernobyl accident, and what we're doing now is trying to truncate any distribution of milk that might contain radioactive iodine. And why do we want to do that? Because had that happened at Chernobyl, had we been able to truncate distribution of milk, the thyroid cancers that we have observed at Chernobyl probably would have been entirely eliminated or significantly reduced in number.
There have also been birth defects.
There are minimal birth defects. The radiation doses that were necessary to produce, that would be necessary to produce birth defects, are far higher than the doses that people in the surrounding areas would have received. Birth defects have a threshold. It's roughly 10,000 millirem, and the dose to people in the general public surrounding Chernobyl received a dose far less than that. There's an interesting study that the International Atomic Energy Agency had done or reported that indicated that there was a large number of therapeutic abortions that had taken place in the months following the Chernobyl accident, and it was based primarily on fear and concern about radiological effects that were not backed up by actual dose measurements that were made to the mothers. So that was an unfortunate outcome, driven by a lot of fear about potential health effects from radiation.
On today's Please Explain look at radiation, we're talking with Kenneth Mossman of the Arizona State University in Tempe and Jacqueline Yanch of MIT, and taking your calls at 646-829-3985. And let's go to one of those calls. Avriel from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Recently, my son is 3 years old. Recently, he had a fall off a piece of furniture. It seemed like a really innocuous fall, but he actually lacerated the skin inside his ear, and he was bleeding from his ear. I went to the emergency room. They couldn't find the laceration, so they didn't want to rule out that he actually had some sort of a brain injury and that the blood was coming from his brain. So he had a CAT scan. Obviously, we tried to not let it happen, but it was hospital procedure. And so I'm wondering, for a three-year-old, for someone that young, what is the sort of damage or how bad is that?
Because it does have more of an impact on the bodies of young children, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Primarily because for two reasons. One, the tissues primarily in the brain are still developing, and also a child has a much longer lifespan ahead of her, such that if there is a radiogenic effect to be expressed, it is going to be expressed decades later and is more likely to be seen in a person who was exposed as a child rather than someone exposed to a who was 60 years old and exposed or 70 years old. But the fundamental principle about medical imaging is this, that If a radiological study is justified, then the radiation, clinically justified, then the radiation dose should not be a reason to cancel it. And I would encourage everyone to question their doctor about whether a particular study is needed. And if the doctor can explain why a study is needed, then there should be no reservation about using radiation to evaluate a particular situation. But if you don't do the CT study, there may be something missed. And it's always gratifying to get a negative study. It relieves potential concerns about a fall and the effects for head injury.
But Dr. Yanch, didn't I read in the Times recently that there are concerns that that CAT scans and PET scans may also be causing cancer in some cases?
It is a possibility. However, we have no direct data to suggest that those doses are creating cancer. We do have data that say that large doses of radiation delivered very quickly do result in an increase in the cancer rate. And we must remember that the cancer rate, 1 in 3 people will get cancer. We're talking about relatively small increases, even for a significant dose. But at the low doses, including the doses of CT scans, which are significant, we have no direct data to say that those doses are dangerous. What we do to err on the side of safety is to make some assumptions and extrapolate from the high dose data down to low doses and come up with an estimate of risk. But I agree with Dr. Mossman, we have a possibility of a risk of cancer from using CT scans, and we have to weigh that against the diagnostic information we're going to get. And if Ariel's son is bleeding from the ear and there's a suggestion that he might be bleeding from the brain, it is no question that the CT scan was the way to go.
Well, actually, the Times pointed out that in some cases it had to do more with the machines not being calibrated correctly and blasting patients with 10 times the radiation that they should have. Another listener.
Well, if I could I add something to that?
Sure.
That's another question. The medical community is very much aware that radiation doses. That radiation doses can be high with some of these procedures, and there are attempts and efforts to reduce the doses that the patients are getting without compromising diagnostic value. There are some scientists, however, who are making claims that the cancer burden in the United States has or will go up because of the large number of CT scans. The methodologies that are being used and the calculations that are being done are questionable and are not necessarily supported by the scientific community or by authoritative bodies that are interested in medical radiation safety.
But isn't there some irony in the fact that it may cause cancer and at the same time we're using it to fight cancer?
Oh, sure. I think that's an interesting aspect of radiation as a two-edged sword, and was one of the reasons why I got into radiological health as a academic profession. I was fascinated by the idea that on the one hand radiation can do the things it can cause cancer, but on the other it can be used to treat cancer. But we're talking about very different doses of radiation to accomplish those things. As Professor Yanch correctly noted, where we see cancer, where the evidence is at very, very high doses, doses that far exceed the majority of medical X-ray applications. There are a few, like cardiac catheterizations and things like that, where you can accumulate dose that approximates those doses at Hiroshima and Nagasaki, where we have our primary evidence for cancer induction. But for the most part, dental x-rays, mammography, chest x-rays, other common kinds of procedures involve patient doses that are far below any kind of risk for cancer. And the studies that have been done have not revealed any kind of evidence for cancer.
Jacqueline Yance, a listener, asks about the high levels of radiation exposure by flight attendants and pilots. An unspoken rule in the flight industry says that female flight attendants take 6 months off from work prior to attempting to get pregnant.
Well, most of the radiological burden for conception is carried by the male, so I find that rather an odd strategy.
Mm-hmm. But aren't we exposed to higher levels of radiation when we fly?
Oh, absolutely. The air around us provides a significant amount of shielding from the radiation that comes from outside of our galaxy and what comes from the sun. So flight attendants and pilots receive more radiation than people on the ground, certainly. Is it an enormous amount? No, it's typically less than one CT scan of the abdomen, for instance, even for somebody working full-time in that industry.
Let's take a call now. Go ahead.
I find it interesting that people are concerned about potential health hazards from the increased cosmic ray dose that you get flying 35,000 or 40,000 feet, when the real public health problem is the recirculated air in the cabins. Because of payload considerations, most airlines do not circulate fresh air. They just recirculate the air that's in there. A lot of people have clinical problems breathing and get pulmonary infections, things of that nature. Those are real risks. Those are risks that we see all the time. The cosmic ray dose and the potential for cancer is really a theoretical risk and is not one that has been realized in any way.
It's an
interesting problem on how we prioritize our risks. What risks do we want to pay attention to? The risk that we ought to pay attention to is the air cabin quality, not the cosmic ray dose.
Let me try to sneak one more call in here. Doug from Carmel, New York. Doug, you have to make it quick.
Hello?
Yes, Doug. Could you make it quick, please?
Yes, real quick. Everyone's talking about the radiation, but as I understand, it's a cumulative. So what is the number of millirams one should expect over a course of, say, a year that would be safe? Because you're running into this at the airports and CAT scans, is everything.
You know, it's the fact that it's not coming all at once that actually provides a benefit. All the information we have suggests that getting a certain radiation dose all at once is much more hazardous than getting it spread out over time. And so living in a contaminated environment is better than getting that same dose all at once. And the fact that you get a little bit from airline travel, a little bit from the scanner, a little bit from background, spread out over time actually is better for you than getting it all at once.
And our bodies can rid themselves of this over time?
Well, the radiation coming in a bit at a time, the body has time to address whatever damage that radiation does. Mm-hmm. And that's, for instance, DNA damage repair takes place on, a 20-minute time scale. So spreading out the dose is what you want to do.
Jacqueline Yance is a radiation physicist and senior lecturer in the Department of Nuclear Science and Engineering at MIT, and Kenneth Mossman is a professor of health physics at Arizona State University at Tempe. And I want to thank you both so much for being on today's Please Explain. And remember, we also have a little explanation of it all on our blog, The Lowdown, on our website. Thank you again.